Morning, boys. Anyone have any prayer requests this morning?
Bless.
I'm not really familiar with all these people. I've heard their names, maybe. Tell me a little bit where is Bless or who is she?
She was in Philippines and we had been in contact with her. We lost contact with her.
Okay. Sure. Is she the one that married now?
Yeah.
Whatever God was waiting for. Who said that? Is he faithful as far as we know? Anyone else have anything?
Speaking of Paul Sway, he had a few years ago gone to study in Mexico City in university, and he lost out. And he lost contact with him for 2 years. He repented and turned to the Lord. His children never stopped praying for him. So that's good. Thank you for that.
Do you think of anything that we should thank God for? Nehemiah chapter 4. Sorry, I know I'm very soft spoken. I tend to not speak very loud, so hopefully y'all can hear. In chapter 3, we saw that everyone, the whole chapter is about talking about how the people work together. All these people had been, all these people had been living at Jerusalem, and the place was just in ruins until Nehemiah came. And got them all organized and got them all working together, repairing the walls of Jerusalem, which was the city of God. The earth was the city of God at the time. In this chapter, and I'm sure there's a lot more, I think there was a few things in the previous chapter that I noticed. A few people that got special mention. One was the Tekoites, the nobles of the Tekoites, who had said, "Put not their neck to the work of their Lord." They just decided they didn't want to help, so they got a special mention. And the other was Baruch, the son of Zabai, said he earnestly repaired the other piece. And I think that was just the way that that he always did everything diligently as unto the Lord. Now in this chapter we'll see what happens when the people of God come together and start building the wall of Jerusalem. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. The first thing he did was try to discourage them by just making fun of them. And that's often the way it goes when people try to stop us from doing something good. They try to make fun of us so that we'll just stop doing it. And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, "What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned?" Now Tobiah, the Ammonite, was by him, and he said, "Even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall." So they were just making fun. But it sounds here as if they were trying to pretend as if they're not worried at all, just making fun of these people, Jews. But the truth is, they were very worried. And that's why... that's why they were trying to stop them. Does anyone know why they were so worried about them rebuilding the wall? They didn't seem to mind too much when they were just living there. It says they were in affliction and... As long as the people of God, the Jews just lived among the heathen, they didn't care too much. But they knew and remembered, since we read about more of that in Ezra, that at one time they had been a powerful kingdom, and there were powerful kings. They were afraid that they were going to stop paying taxes, but then eventually they were afraid that they were going to actually have to pay taxes to the Jews. Now this is Nehemiah's prayer. It's prayer here, starting at verse 4.
Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity. And cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So built we the wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonite and the Ashdodite heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth and conspired all of them together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. Here they were starting to get discouraged because just the constant threat of all the enemies around them. These enemies weren't necessarily just, they weren't really all together, but they were all together in the sense that they were all against Jerusalem. They were all united in opposing the Jews. And here they had the wall halfway, but they started, there was a lot of rubbish, and they started to, as the strength of the bearers of burden is decayed. And our adversaries said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you. Therefore said I, in the lower places behind the wall and on the higher places, I even set the people after their families and their swords and their spears, with their swords and their spears and their bows. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, and your daughters, your wives, and your houses. And it came to pass, when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, everyone unto his work. Now that immediate threat was over, and they all returned back to work. But it says, and it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears and shields and the bows and the habergeons, I think that's armor, and the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. They which bared it on the wall, and they which bare burdens, with those that laid it, every one with one of his hands wrought in the work, and the other hand held a weapon. So from here on out, they kept on building. If they would have stopped, because of the threat of the enemy, they would have been Sanballat, and the rest would have been actually had accomplished their goal of stopping the work. But now we see half of the people are on guard always with their weapons, and the other half are still working, but they're armed too. Everyone that's is helping to build is a builder and a soldier. They're at the same time they're building, they also have their weapons ready to to fight back the enemy wherever he might show up, and that was because there was no telling where he might show up. They just had to always be on guard. They which filled it on the wall, and they that bare burdens, with those that laid it, everyone with one of his hands wrought into work, and with the other hand held a weapon. I think I read that. But the statement says, for the builders, everyone had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me. And I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye thither unto us, our God shall fight for us. So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Likewise, at the same time, said I unto the people, let everyone with his servant lodge within Jerusalem. Likewise, at the same time, said I unto the people, let everyone with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us, and later on the day. I think he was talking about people that lived outside of the city. He told them to just stay inside the walls at night, so that they would be safe. So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that everyone put them off for washing. That last verse makes me think, really, that about how they were really had put their mind to the work, and they were not gonna stop, they were not gonna let up until they were done. I should have said before I started that we feel free to ask any questions as we go. I know anyone think of anything that you had a question on that we read, or that you have any thoughts about anything, how this could relate to Paul wrote in Ephesians 6 that we know that we're in a battle too, but we don't have a sword jangling at our side and heavy armor and made out of metal. And Paul wrote that we wrestle not against flesh and blood. That means we don't fight against the people that we see. Like when we go out preaching, we're not fighting against the people that we see, against the flesh and blood. We're fighting against but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places, we're fighting a spiritual battle. It's against the powers of darkness that control evil people, or that evil people have yielded themselves to and allowed to rule their life. What is one way that Jesus taught us to overcome the evil? Overcome evil in this world. We were in Tulsa one night, not long ago. Me and Brother Ryan were standing on the corner, and there was someone got angry at a sign that I was holding. It said that wives should obey their husbands. And he got really angry at it, and was yelling and cursing and seemed like he wanted to beat me up, and I thought he might. He got so angry, but later, Ryan told me that deep down, that person didn't want to beat me up unless I got angry at him, unless I would have returned evil for evil. And he would have felt justified to take the next. That's the way fights happen. You think somebody, you don't like something that somebody did, and you can maybe feel justified, maybe getting a little angry at him, and then if he gets angry back because he feels you weren't justified, then it just escalates like that. But when you turn good for evil, that overcomes that evil. So that's all I have this morning. Unless anyone has any other questions. I guess we had you look up verses about the tongue, about things like that. Yeah. Okay, well, maybe we'll just start on the left here. And around.
Ephesians 4:29. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as good for the edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear.
Proverbs 12:22. Lying lips are abomination to the Lord, but they that do it truly are his delight.
Philippians 2:14-15. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you will prove yourself to be blameless and innocent, children of God, above reproach in the midst of a crooked, perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world.
1 Peter 3:10. For he that loves life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no gossip.
Titus 3:2. Remind them to say, even
Proverbs 13:3. He that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life, but he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. Proverbs 6:16-19. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among them.
James 3:5. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold, how great a matter of little fire can be.
Proverbs 26:22. The words of a talebearer are as spoons, and they go down into the inner part of the tongue.
Proverbs 34:13. Keep thy tongue from evil, and thy lips from speaking God.
Leviticus 19:16. Thou shalt not build up and down as a talebearer among thy people, neither shalt thou stand against the bolt of thy neighbor. I am the Lord.
Psalm 71:24. Thy tongue also shall talk of thy righteousness all the day long.
What is a talebearer? We've heard several verses about talebearing. So. Yeah, just relating things, and usually it's talking about relating things that wouldn't need to be related, and the intent is to shed a bad light on someone else. It's just, I think that somewhere, maybe somebody can help me, there's a verse that speaks about with a lot of words, a lot of sin goes with a lot of speaking a lot.
The one to not sin or something.
Yeah.
The multitude of words.
Yeah. With our mouth, with our tongue, is one of the easiest ways, one of the quickest ways, I think, that we can sin. It's just so easy to say something that we can be is evil, that is unwholesome, like Judas first said, or being a talebearer, or just remember, if you don't have anything good to say something, or edifying is another word, if whatever we say, if it's not edifying and good, then we best leave it unsaid. If you're not sure whether you should say it, it's probably safer to not say it. Do you have something for next week? What do you have a question?
What about just have to look up wherever the scripture says that we could lose our salvation.
Okay.
Wherever we could, after being God's children, depart and lose our crown or salvation.
About falling away. About being, it we kind of go, could go with.
Someone would answer that. Is there someone who would tell them that once you're saved, it can't change. You're always saved till you die.
verses that, I don't know if you know what eternal security is, but some of you do, I'm sure, but verses that would refute the idea that once we're a Christian, we can never fall away and be in Satan's kingdom again.